Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 99 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show and of The Wilder Ride. Welcome back, Alan.
Thank you so much. It feels like it's just been 4 hours.
Actually, it feels like it's even longer than that.
For me, the time, it seems like it goes by in the blink of an eye.
Ah, there you go. And it apparently it does for the characters in the movie too. So, you know, they don't have to wait hiatuses like we do. What can they do? It just flows really well for them.
It's almost like 1 minute goes right into the next.
That's right. One minute usually goes right into the next, but sometimes we skip, so who knows. Minute 99 begins with Lorenzo still in shock, and he probably is going to need to change his shorts, and ends with a whole bunch of commuters, passengers trying to get out of the door of the airport. You know, a lot of fake running. You know, we'll see. This movie does fake running really well when it comes to extras, so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
I will have something to say when we get to one of the wider shots, because just if in case I forget, I don't think I will, because I've got a note here to remind you about when my wife and I did our first ever zombie run, a 5K zombie run. And it's something I learned, that when it comes to an apocalypse, you can't run holding on to somebody.
Not unless you're eating their brains. Yeah. You can't hold on. I guess you can't hold on to a full body. But, you know, if it's only body parts, then maybe that works.
When we get there, I'll explain. But, yeah, it was a hard lesson to learn early in the run for me.
Okay. All right. That is fair.
A little tease to keep the people listening.
There you go. So we ended things yesterday with John somehow miraculously surviving shooting the chief of police. Not just shooting him. Just spraying him, you know, with a full clip, or almost a full clip, because he still had, you know, magic bullets, magic blank bullets left over afterwards to show that they are blanks. So, And, you know, at this point, Lorenzo walks over to the phone and you see him still shaking. And he goes, "This is Chief Lorenzo. I want every officer recalled and assembled in body armor and full weaponry in the motor pool in 5 minutes." And then he turns to the camera and goes, "It's time to kick ass." Or actually, he says, "It's time to kick ass." You know, he doesn't even let it flow.
Well, and he does the thing that drives me nuts in almost every one of these action movies. You know darn well whether or not your clip is in there and full of bullets. Why you have to eject the clip, check it's full of bullets, put it back in, to accent just how angry you are about taking action.
And they don't even check it the right way. I'm assuming when you were in the military, you knew how you're supposed to check, you know, if you have enough bullets in the magazine. You're supposed to take your thumb and you're supposed to push down to make sure that it's a full clip. You know, he doesn't even do that. He just pulls it out, looks and sees that he's got a bullet there, and puts it back. So maybe he got like 3 bullets.
I only need one.
You or Lorenzo?
No, I'm talking about exactly what you're saying. Not looking at some clips will have little holes where you can see how far down they are on the side. You know, you can see how full they are. Mm-hmm. But like you said, at the very least, you press your thumb to make sure that you've got every possible round you can fit in there.
That's right.
I mean, you want a full clip, right?
Correct. But I guess in the movies, you don't need a full clip because everyone's got a magically delicious you know, clip that will never expire.
Yeah.
The only time it expires is when the plot needs it to expire.
Of course. Yeah, right.
So, I don't know. It's just, the whole thing, the whole scene is pretty funny. I mean, it actually reminds me of Spaceballs. You know, when Colonel Sanders, you know, takes the comm and says, prepare ship. You know, like he stutters a little bit when he's like telling everyone to get ready to go to ludicrous speed. You know, that type of thing. So it's a similar type of, because he's he wants to say something, but he's still a little trepidatious about saying it.
Mm-hmm. This goes to the actor, though. But does it still in a way that, unless you're picking it apart, it feels sincere.
Correct. You know,
it feels like he really is. He's upset about having been misled. It's dawning on him what's going on, and he needs everyone to focus and all of his troops to like gather quickly. Like, this is for real. Everything we thought is now wrong. We got to go a different direction. And he does a very good weak lines.
Yes, there's no question about that. He definitely does. Did you notice that there's like a secretary watching what could be either a TV screen, you know, maybe she's watching like a movie, or she's watching basically closed circuit TV or something like that. Not really sure. I mean, you can see it already in the first second.
I think, honestly, based on the hallway in the TV, it may be that hallway you come down where a couple of minutes ago where they came riding in on the cart, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah, but it goes to show also that they didn't do their job when they saw some crazy maniac, come down on a golf cart screaming, "Get out of the way, right. Get out of the way."
Well, they got there really fast, so.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And I mean, you can look at Lorenzo. He looks like he is completely sweating like a pig here. You know, he wipes his forehead. You know, and like I said earlier, he probably needs to go change his shorts before he goes out to action right now. After what just happened.
No, I'm almost wondering, because you know how I said he was kind of out of breath, and it was very realistic. This whole sense of him having to like catch his breath because of, you know. And recognizing it's not, I almost wonder, because a lot of actors will do this to kind of get into that mode. It's like he did a set of push-ups or something, and he's really struggling after that to then deliver the lines.
Yeah, he just said, "Okay, I'm gonna run around the block, and then I'm gonna come and run these lines."
And then we'll get ready and action.
That's right.
But you know, it works. That does actually work. If you need to look like you're really panting or out of breath, you might as well just go ahead and run in place for a little bit, because it's a movie. You can just cut and do it again.
That's true. I used a phrase, sweating like a pig. Okay. I'm assuming you've heard that phrase before. Okay.
Very familiar with that phrase.
You're very familiar with the phrase. Okay. Do you know if pigs really sweat?
You know what? I don't. I'm going to guess that if they're like dogs, they don't, unless they sweat either by panting and or through their feet. But I don't know.
Okay, well, the truth is they do not. Because, I mean, obviously the whole idea of sweat is to remove toxins from the body and cool the body off, with the whole thing. And obviously perspiration is liquid and stuff like that. But, pigs just don't do it. Which is... then the question is okay, if pigs don't sweat, so where does this expression come from? Do you have any idea?
I have to imagine it's obviously something old school, some term. I don't want to drag the show out, but something to do with maybe some kind of farm work or some kind of something you would do with your hands, maybe. I don't know. It's just something where you're using the term pig for something else?
Yes, that is true. It's not literally a pig. It's a term that is derived from the iron smelting process. Okay, in which you take hot iron, which is poured on sand, and that cools and solidifies with the pieces and resembles a sow and piglets. So therefore, it is called a pig iron.
Pig iron. Iron, yeah, okay. Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
And then as the iron cools, you know, the air reaches its dew point and beads of moisture form on the surface of these quote-unquote pigs. So sweating like a pig actually indicates that the iron has cooled enough to be safely handled.
Look, now see, there's an interesting nugget to learn for today.
There's always interesting nuggets to learn from my show and from your show. I mean, we all have interesting nuggets that we have to talk about. You talk about real stuff, and I just talk about, typical bullshit. So, why not?
But there's something that now in the back of my mind, I knew the minute you mentioned iron, I was like, oh, pig iron. But I didn't realize that when it reaches the cool or like cool enough to touch, it would form beads of water, which makes total sense. And now we understand sweating like a pig.
That's right. But what's really funny is that I'm sure that there are very few people in the entire world that will actually think that they're talking about an iron here, creating iron as opposed to thinking of the animal itself.
I would say invariably almost everybody would think you're talking about the farm animal.
That's right.
Fact, even when I use the expression, knowing it probably had nothing to do with an actual pig, I still think of a pig. It
That's right.
doesn't
Well,
matter. Even though I know
now
better,
you know.
it
Well,
still
now you know
to me.
better. You didn't know better a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I'll still probably still say sweating like a pig and imagine a pig sweaty.
You'll imagine a pig sweating, and then you'll remember that we talked about it, and you'll be like, wait a second, there was something else. It wasn't really a farm animal.
This is so wrong. Like, there's, we have to.
Wait to figure it out. What is it? What is it? So then you'll just remember, oh, episode 99 of Die Hard 2. I'm going to go back and I'm going to listen again, and therefore I will be reminded as to what it really means to sweat like a pig. So you see, I'm going to be helping you in the future also.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna have one of those Sheldon moments where, funny f funny thing about that phrase, and everybody's gonna be
That's right. As long as you're not, talking about fun with flags, you're okay.
fun with flags.
That's right. Alan Sanders
Interesting
presents
fact.
Fun with
No.
Flags. Exactly. That's actually the second
Nicely
time
done.
that this has come up in the show. So it just came up just a few weeks ago. So that's very funny that it came up again. And he mentions the motor pool. Okay, now what where do you think that phrase comes from?
My guess is where the police vehicles are either worked on, parked, and stored.
Correct. I mean, it's used mostly in the military. The motor pool is where you have all of the all the transportation will be put in. They're all sitting in like one parking lot or a parking structure or something like that, and it's usually just a short-term basis of keeping stuff. Because you have vehicles that are constantly being taken out of this motor pool and brought back in. It's the idea that okay, if you need a vehicle, go to this area, and this is a pool. When you say that something there's a pool of something, it means you have a whole collection of something there. So this is this is the place where you have a collection of vehicles that you can just go and I guess sign out in order to use.
Right. Well, I imagine when you think about it, especially with police, like working the beat or whatever, rookie cops, they get assigned a vehicle with another driver, a partner's. And I'm sure they don't keep driving that same vehicle all the time. They may have it assigned for whatever their duty is, but yeah, that you just pull from the pool of available vehicles.
That's correct. Exactly. So apparently they have a place in the airport that has a lot of cars sitting around waiting for all the police to come and use them. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow when we get there, but today we still have some points that we're going to mention about it. And at this point, we see that Marvin is still sitting there, taking everything in, listening to everything that they're saying, and he just throws his arm up and goes, just like Iwo
Something's wrong with Marvin. Not quite all there.
That's right. But I gotta say, once again, the fact that Tom Bauer is was, I think, just a few years old at the breakout of World War II. So for him to to bring all of these connections to World War II. Like a few earlier this week, he talked about Pearl Harbor, and now he's talking about Iwo Jima. It's just very funny that they're making his character so much older in order for him to be someone who remembers these things fondly. Because if this movie came out in 1990, so it means that Iwo Jima was 45 years earlier. So that means that Marvin must be nearly 70 at this point. But the actor himself is probably in his 50s, his early 50s at the time. So what do you know about the Battle of Iwo Jima?
You know what's sad? And because as much as I'm a fan of World War II, and I've spent most of my historical views of World War II in the European theater, so outside of the Battle of Midway, the battle, obviously Pearl Harbor, and then us dropping the bomb, I don't know a whole lot about battles.
Okay. All right. Well, if you ever get a chance, you should probably see I recommend that you see the Tom Hanks miniseries, The Pacific, which
The Pacific. Yeah, I've been wanting to.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've seen it numerous times.
I do know, obviously, from the not only the Marine Corps hymn, but there's the famous picture of the Marines putting the American flag up at Iwo Jima.
Correct. And if you actually see the movie Flags of Our Fathers, that explains the history of that Clint Eastwood movie that explains the history of the Battle of Iwo Jima from the American standpoint.
Because I know I do know I want to see The Pacific, and I definitely want to see Flags of Our Fathers. It's on my list of things that I need to still make sure I take time to watch.
Right. So, I mean, besides doing Flags of Our Fathers, so Clint Eastwood also did Letters from Iwo Jima, which, in my opinion, is such an amazing movie also. You know, even though I'm not the biggest fan of non-English language movies, you know, especially three-hour ones, but it just tells you so much about the Japanese side of, you know, Japanese perspective of the Battle of Iwo Jima. And to have an American director like Clint Eastwood, you know, in the same year, put out two movies, you know, showing two perspectives on the same battle is just amazing. You know, it shows how great a director he really is, that he's able to take on projects like this. I mean, I don't know if nowadays when he's in his 90s, he's able to do that. You know, he's not directing as many as he used to. Mm-hmm. For obvious reasons.
I think he's actually working on his last one. I remember hearing the story that he is hoping to have the final movie of his directing career started and completed this year, or maybe early next year.
Right. Well, he's
what, 92?
Yeah, he's 93 right now.
Wow.
And
how amazing is that?
I mean, really
I want to be able to say that I hit my 90s and I'm still doing something I love.
And you're making you're directing movies and acting in them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a movie called Juror Number 2. Which is what he's working on right now. I didn't know that he said that this is going to be his last project. That I didn't. Okay. Well, I mean, it sort of makes sense. At a certain point, you gotta start hedging your bets.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, unless you're gonna self-fund it, the studio's like, do we fund something that might not get finished, or we'll have to hand it over to someone else halfway through? I mean, it's a real legitimate conversation piece to have when you're somebody who's in their early 90s.
Right, but maybe he actually has someone, you know, shadowing him, you know, to take over if need be. I mean, the movie also has Kiefer Sutherland in it. But I mean, they stopped production because of the strike. So,
yeah.
We'll have to wait and see what happens with that in the end. You know. Actually, maybe by the time this airs the strike will be over, but for some reason I doubt it, because of the time difference between recording and releasing. So, you know, who knows? So
we'll see.
Back to what we were talking about. The Battle of Iwo Jima raged from the 19th of February to the 26th of March 1945. So that is a little over a month. And it was one of the major battles between the U.S. Marine Corps, and the Japanese army during World War II. The Americans basically invaded the island of Iwo Jima, which it was, the name of the operation was called Operation Detachment. And the whole idea was that there were two airfields on this island, and they wanted to capture them in order to get a closer stepping stone to the Japanese mainland. And like I said, if you watch The Pacific, or I mean, you can even go all the way back and watch John Wayne movies like The Sands of Iwo Jima, just to give you an idea of what's going on. But, you know, there's a number of places that you can go to get to visually see it, you know, that type of thing. They had over 100,000 Marines, or sorry, over 100,000 U.S. troops were were involved in this battle, and there were more than 500 ships that they had, and the Japanese only had about 21,000 troops there, and they were still able to hold off for over a month. So that
That's
they're very resi they were very
amazing.
resilient.
Yeah. Well, it's that whole adage when you're fighting for your what you think is your land that's yours versus being on someone else's land, you fight harder.
That's correct. That's correct. So, of the 110,000 Marines that are there, or I keep saying that, of the 110,000 US troops, how many casualties do you think there were?
Well, I know there were always just so many on all of the island hopping battles. So, I mean, you had 20,000 Japanese holding off for a month. You would like to think it was at least that each Japanese soldier was able to get one kill. So, are we talking over 20,000?
Okay, there weren't 20,000 kills, but there were approximately there were nearly 27,000 casualties, and among that there were 6,100 Marines that were killed.
So, think about that. The carnage for a small island in the
That's
Pacific.
right. That's definitely true. And okay, so now look at the Japanese side. How many do you think what were their casualties like? So again, they had 21,000 troops there.
I gotta imagine once again being believing that their emperor was divine and that they were doing this for their country. I gotta say at least half of them, so well over 10,000 casualties.
18,000 dead or missing soldiers.
So almost all of them just went out fighting.
That's
They
right.
all died fighting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And again, if you watch any of those movies that we mentioned before, you'll see how much carnage there. I mean, obviously it's from a Hollywood view, but still, there was a lot of carnage there. It's mind-blowing. Basically, there were two ships that were named the USS Iwo Jima. Obviously, there you have the memorial, the Marine Corps Memorial, which you talked about, which was dedicated on the 10th of November 1954 at Arlington. I've actually been there. It's amazing how huge it is. You know, it's the famous picture, if anyone is unfamiliar, of I think five or six men that were putting up the flag. You know, when the US took over, the top hill. And as I started saying before, there were two ships that they named the USS Iwo Jima's. There was there was one that was in use from 1961 to 1993 when it was retired, and then they have another one in 2001. That was christened the USS Iwo Jima, which I actually find very interesting that they have that they named a new ship by the same name. It's not like it's the Enterprise A or Enterprise C or something like that. It's just they're both called the Iwo Jimas. You know, they don't say Iwo Jima B or something like that.
No, but I think, well, I'm pretty sure, but again, this is one of those things where you think you know, but I don't remember reading this anywhere, but I think as long as one of the ships gets decommissioned as the other one is commissioned, it can have the same name, but I don't think you have two commissioned at the
Right.
same
Okay.
time.
No, that makes sense. That I'm aware of. You got to make sure that one is no longer in use before you reuse the name. But still.
Makes you wonder that they go, but this is the new and improved Iwo Jima. But wait, it slices, it dices.
The transporter room is just, much better, and so is sick bay. And then after this happens, we see Lorenzo run out of the room also, and then we get a shot of people in the airport looking at the news report, seeing what Thornburg is saying, and we actually get to hear him, even though I'm curious to know how these people can actually hear it, because I doubt that these TV screens are blasting, the audio.
No, isn't that funny? Had you never said this, had you just this second never said that, it never crosses our minds as a movie watcher that there's no way everyone in as loud and as ranging as an airport is, on those concourses, There's no way all of a sudden the little TV speaker in the one bar where they said, turn it up, that the entire airport is hearing it.
That's right.
And yet we buy it because we're hearing it as the voiceover. We're watching it, you know, the movie, but we're hearing it as if we're the ones sitting in the bar. And we just naturally go, well, of course, everyone's going to run at the same time.
Of course. Of course. And Thornburg, basically, we hear him say, since then, this reporter has learned that the terrorists have virtual control of the entire airport, a fact that the authorities have repressed. The terrorists promise more bloodshed unless their demands are met. And now that a special army commandos have arrived at the airport, the likelihood of a full-scale and deadly battle is dangerously close. And people are starting to, you know, it's funny that he mentions that they now have control over the entire airport, but all these people are in the airport and they're like, who's in control here? You know, what is he talking about? No one said anything to me about that.
And what goes along with this, and I love this because initially I think they were sort of mocking the poor investigative journalist, you know, because he's technically telling he believes is the truth based on what he knows, but we know he doesn't know everything yet. That's the story that's going out over the wire. So that's what everybody thinks has been vetted and true, but it's not. It's not entirely true. It's his version of what he thinks is true, which is what's causing the panic, which is ironic. You're mocking that maybe back in the 90s, and one would argue we've only gotten worse with your media today.
Exactly. But we're going to steer far away from politics here. You know, but
right. Well, you know. I'm just commenting because you know that it was more about making fun of Thornburg in this, that he's sort of like the butt of the joke here because he's hyping a story because he's in it and he's making himself.
Correct. I mean,
and that's, I think, you know,
I think the whole idea of Thornburg, both in this movie and the previous movie, he's basically supposed to be like a Geraldo Rivera type of guy.
Right.
You know, that's
and,
the thing.
And at the time, kind of mocking him for his sensationalism that doesn't always pan out.
Correct. That's right. And as the people are starting to get crazy here, you know, we see them like knock over different things in stores. You know, there's like an aquarium that gets knocked over. That's really, really cool looking, the way that the water inside, you know, changes because it's been tipped over. You can see that at the 29-second mark. Not really sure what that's supposed to be, but it just looks really cool. Yeah, you know, maybe it's like a sharper image.
I know what this is.
You do?
This was actually, really popular for like calming you down, for like the meditation. You had the two layers of liquid. One was heavier than the other. One dyed to be a different color. So by moving on this little motor back and forth, it would simulate the motion of waves. And it was designed to be kind of an office decoration. But if you stared at it, it would calm you down. This whole idea of this. Almost like you're watching water, like waves coming in and out of the shore.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I mean, I have one of those things, you know, I have one of those things in my office where, you know, if you flip it over, then like it starts dripping down one color into another color, you know, and like floats. So it's a similar type of thing, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's like the lava lamps, but rather than it like heating up and rising to the surface, then it cooling down and coming back down. It's literally on a motor that rocks it slowly, and so it creates this motion back and forth, and because it's the two, almost like oil and water, they don't mix, so they end up staying separated,
right.
And it's just, it was a huge fad at places like Sharper Image and other stores like that were just, you know, what do you buy for the person that's got everything? Well, get them a motion of the ocean, you know, decoration or whatever.
Right, but, I mean, it looks like someone tips it over, that's the thing. But if you're saying that it usually is supposed to be that way, so maybe someone just like knocks into it, so it looks like it's just moving from that perspective.
We're not seeing it long enough to rock the other way because it literally was on a two little arms or pivots that would like one side would come down almost like a seesaw,
right?
And it would go up on one side and then it would come down, so that way it would create that rocking motion.
Correct.
But somebody drops a vase right by it for some reason.
That's right. Well, because you can break a vase. And I mean, people are really running out of here. You know, everyone's like running out of the newsstand. And then we once again see, you know, Thornburg on the TV screen continuing to talk. And then it switches back to Thornburg as he's talking. And once again, we get to see that he's holding the phone upside down. He's still holding the phone upside down.
Well, it's from the original take yesterday.
maybe. Maybe.
Or the day before.
I'm still amazed that nobody caught this at the time.
Can I ask now what I think should be a reasonable question?
Of course.
Where are they running to? Like, you're in a giant airport. You're either there to catch a flight to leave or to wait for somebody to land. I mean, are you abandoning the people who you're waiting for?
Like, to hell, or are you to hell with grandma. I'm getting out of here.
Right. Like in reality, if this were to happen, I mean, I'm just curious what would really happen if all of a sudden over the speakers, ladies and gentlemen, we have just found out this airport is no longer in the control of our authorities. There is a commando unit on scene. I mean, don't you think you would just kind of sit still and say, okay, it's not happening here. What are you going to do? Run to your car and leave?
I guess that's what the people are trying to do.
It works because, I mean, it's sheer panic. People do stupid things. But in reality, I'm like, you guys it didn't bother you that a plane just, you know, crashed on the runway and 200 people fine just hanging out in the airport drinking and, you know, waiting. But now all of a sudden there may have been a terrorist incident. Well, duh, the plane crashed.
Again, we'll go back to the airplane scenario, you know, where they say, well, you know, we're running into trouble and whatever. And, you know, we don't have a pilot and we're all out of coffee. And then everyone goes crazy. Yeah. You know?
That's the emergency. Coffee. No.
Exactly. You know, everything else no one really cares about. But no more coffee. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I don't know. But I agree with you. There's no way of knowing where they're running to.
Right. But it works. It works in a movie. We feel the panic, the urgency, because now not only have we gotten, you know, the rug pulled out from under us within the last, you know, this week's worth of minutes we're talking about, but we get to feel that energy now play out on screen.
Correct. Yeah. And they do it really well. You know, the newsstand or gift shop or something like that, you know, where anyone who's been in an airport is familiar with it, the way that these things work and stuff like that. You know, it's not new that, you know, you're going to go there and you know that the prices are going to be, you know, really much higher than what you normally, you know, you usually get a stick of gum or a pack of gum for a certain price and this will be twice the price. You know, they're basically tourist traps.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're stuck there. What are you going to do?
That's right. Yeah, you're just going to have to, if you want that pack of gum, you got to pay for it. That's why. And, you know, nowadays we have the whole scam where, you know, you because you can't take any drinks on a plane with you. Okay. Sorry. You can't bring drinks through the, you know, through the TSA checkpoints, but once you're beyond the TSA checkpoint, you can actually buy a drink and then take it onto the plane. Right. And they don't care. So
yeah,
it's that we don't trust your liquids, but we trust the expensive liquids that you must buy, you know, if you want something to drink. We get another shot of people just completely in panic, running in all different directions. You know, you see like a guy who's running that looks like he's holding like a gym bag and he's like screaming and it looks like these people are all running from the apocalypse. And that, I guess, brings us to what you asked me to remind you of earlier this minute, you know, that to talk about how you and your wife found out about, you know, why it's not good if you're in a zombie apocalypse to be, you know, running in pairs.
Yeah, they've got a couple of stunt actors who, right about second 53 in this, they do a stage dive, the two of them, and then they do this thing where they both are getting up, hanging on to one another as if they're both trying to help each other up while they're both on the ground at the same time. They get up, they spin, the one guy has his arm around his shoulder, she's got her arm around his back, and they run out holding on to one another.
Yes, until the end of the minute. At the end of the minute, they actually, you know, no longer are embracing, but they embrace for a good 10 seconds here as they're running.
Yeah, you do see them eventually split apart, and it looks like they're approaching like some kind of a plan. So what I wanted to talk about is how you realize that's a movie trope. It is not a real life one. I don't know anybody who in real life that has ever been in a situation would find themselves running more efficiently by hanging on to another human being.
Efficiently or wanting to save somebody? You know, it's like the type of thing that, you know, you want to, if you're with a loved one and you're running somewhere, you're going to want to hold on to them with your life, you know, so that you both get out safe.
Okay, that point, until you're really put to the test.
Unless you're George Costanza, And you know, there's a fire in an apartment set by set by a clown.
Right. But in reality, let's talk zombie apocalypse. Because this is more realistic, right?
Yeah, of course.
We did this zombie run, and it was across country, all through these hills, up and down. They had all of these obstacle areas, and then they had what they were called the zombie zones. So you didn't end up running the whole time because you needed to sprint through the zombie zones. And everybody was wearing a flag, like flag football. If you got three flags taken off of you before you made it to the end, you were considered infected, and you get an infected medal at the end. And if you get to the end with at least one flag, you're considered a survivor. One of the first things that we did with the first zone is I was reaching to kind of help a friend of ours who came, and I was trying to grab her hand to kind of lead her through. And all of a sudden, it pulled me around. I got spun over, fell down, up around already. At that point, zombie took one of my flags. I'm like, that's it. I'm not going to be helping anybody again. My wife and I were sitting there. I'm like, okay, this next one, you run that way. I'm running this way. I'll see you on the other side of the field, because we both have to have complete control of everything. You realize very, very quickly when you're being pursued, you got to take care of yourself. It's like the whole airplane thing. Put your mask on
That's
first
right.
before you help somebody else.
That's true. I thankfully don't think I've ever been in that type of situation, not even for fun like you did. So, I can't really weigh in on that. But
I just,
it's great. But it's great to hear the story from you,
it was
because
one of
then
those
I
things
now
where,
know how it works.
yeah, it, and honest to God, it was the funniest thing. And my wife and I have said this to friends, is like, you realize if there was ever a quote zombie apocalypse, everyone for yourself. You hope to get to the end. You want to work together, but you're not clinging on one another, running through them. You need full freedom and flexibility if you want to survive. And it always strikes me funny now whenever I see a scene like this in a movie, because it is a human. It's human nature to want to maybe protect, and you think by holding on to somebody, you're going to protect them. But in reality, it doesn't really do anything
Right.
besides slow you both
That's
down.
true. Now, did you notice that behind these two people, that the couple that fell down, so there's a guy with a blue shirt wearing a baseball hat. Did you take a look at him as he's running? You can tell that he's following someone's direction. Okay, if you start at the 52-second mark and you just let it run, he keeps looking over towards the camera,
Okay.
and he's like jogging along, waving his arms around. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Let's see, about 52. It just says the
Look
couple
behind them.
spills
There's a
and
guy in a blue
falls.
shirt with a baseball hat.
What, with a red brim?
Yes.
Okay, I'm looking at him. But do you know
So
what I
watch
noticed?
him run along now. But it looks like a fake run the entire way that he's doing it. He's like, listening to the director say, okay, turn at the corner,
But do you
pretend
know
you're
what?
running. Because look at his arms. He's not really running.
I think everyone's
He's like
doing
dog
this.
paddling.
Everyone's doing this. Everyone's adding additional motion to make it look like it's more frantic.
Maybe.
Some people are doing it better than others, but if you watch everybody, like everybody's like almost pumping their arms more than they would. They're all kind of moving because they're not running full speed, but they're trying to make it look like it's all this energy. So yeah, I think we had
Right.
this one guy who was just getting into it a little bit more than everyone else. But that's funny. It's actually visually creating more energy, even though they're not really running at full speed.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they just do it really well here.
I
Right.
bet they
I
had
like
a.
it.
I bet they had the whole crowd, like the B unit director, whoever was going to be in charge of all the background extras, or even a C unit with a big motion picture like this. He probably had, okay, here's what we're going to do, and we want to make it look like we don't want anybody getting hurt. Okay, everybody here, you're all an extra, but here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna, and you just pump, but kind of jog, but pump, but kind of jog. Make it look like you're running really hard, but kind of jog. So that way you can react in case somebody trips and falls.
Yes.
I've seen this before with massive sword fights. If you slow down things like Braveheart, you'll see guys that are just in the background and they're just making X's with their swords, but because they have these edits so fast that you don't pay attention, you're kind of watching what's in the foreground. But then you stop and you go, those guys aren't really even fighting. They're just going clang, 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 clang. But because there's so many people doing that, your mind just can't follow it all.
Right. It's true. And they do this really well.
I mean,
And
it's a
with
great scene. Like I said, the energy, they're all running for the exit.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But you bring up the point that it just doesn't make any sense of
No.
where they're all running to. I think maybe it's just that they're trying to get out of the airport. That's what it is. The airport's been taken over, but the parking lot has not. So, you have a way of doing that.
Yeah.
Did you see in the background? There's a guy who jumps up on top of also in around the 50-second mark. If you take a look in the background, there's a guy who jumps on the luggage carts, like literally leaps onto them in the background. And you see him like above everyone else.
I don't think it's the lecture. I think it's a row of chairs.
Oh, is
No,
that a row
you're
of chairs? Oh, you're right. It could
Is
be
it the
either.
chairs? Yeah, but I think I know what you mean, where it's kind of got those back-to-back chairs, and he literally just hopped over them. I want to make it in the movie. I want to be in the movie. There's a lot of people whose faces are darting kind of toward where the camera is set up.
There are hundreds of people that when they watch this movie, pause it and say, "Hey, look, there's me."
That was me. I
There
was
I am. I'm the
the
guy.
guy in the
I'm the
Benny
guy who
Hanna
jumped out here.
coat.
That's right. I got paid $50 to be in this scene, or whatever they pay extras. Do they pay extras? I know you've been an extra in
Yes.
movies.
Yeah, it averages out to about minimum wage for a 12-hour day. So, they usually will fool younger actors. They'll say something like, "Oh, well, we're going to hire you for $100 a day." You're like, "Oh, cool, it's $100 a day." You're like, "Yeah, but it's a 12-hour day."
100 bucks for a 12-hour day. Yeah, okay. Well, again, maybe they let you go, eat from the craft services, and you get whatever you want from the caterer or something like that. Maybe there are people who, for them, it's worth it. You get paid 100 bucks, you get all you can eat food, and you get to be directed around and told, okay, run this way, run that way, pretend you're being chased.
Here's what I can tell you. There are a handful of people who are there. They're going to take it seriously. They've been on enough sets. They're okay being background extra, but almost everybody is hoping to be, quote, discovered. They're all, "What can I do? I'm willing to come to the set for minimum wage in 12-hour days because the director will scan the room, realize our other actress is not going to make it. We need someone. Look at you. You're the perfect fill-in." Doesn't work that way, but we all believe it.
Is that what you're hoping for whenever you're a
When I first
you're a
started,
background person?
oh, when I first started, absolutely. I was like, as
When
soon
you
as they,
started, but I'm talking about now.
oh no, no, not now, no. I don't even do background extra stuff because I know exactly what to expect. I'm like, no. If I'm not at least going to do something featured or spoken, I'm not doing it.
No, but you told me that you were background in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
I wasn't background. We were watching it. It was shot in our hometown where I live. And or the city where I live, and we watched them shoot it, but I wasn't in it. No.
Oh, I thought you were part of like a big crowd there or something like that.
No, we were watching it. We were literally sitting in the radio. They redid the entire our entire town of downtown Cartersville became some Midwest town, and they literally put brand new labeling on all the windows, all the buildings. Everything was rebranded as if we were a completely different town. For a 2-day shoot. It was over the weekend. And when the blobs are kind of exploding and they're taking over all these towns, when Ego is deciding he's going to have all these things, destroying all these planets, we watched from the window of our studio because they renamed our studio even. So we were just watching James Gunn shoot this scene from doing our radio show. We just couldn't have the outdoor speakers on.
Oh, wow.
It was really wild. Yeah. So we literally watched for 2 days. Filming a scene that lasted maybe 20 seconds in the movie.
Very cool. And you
Yeah.
can always say whenever you watch it, I saw that without effects. And with all this fake running, that's how this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Alan?
No, I think we've got it pretty well covered.
All right. Okay, so the script. I'm just going to read it because it's actually a little interesting here. So it starts off with Lorenzo screaming, "Holy sh!" And then he picks up a phone and says, "This is Chief Lorenzo. I want every officer recalled now and assembled in body armor, full weaponry in the motor pool in 5 minutes. It's time to kick ass." And in the script, the phrase "kick ass" is actually underlined. It says he slams the phone down, checks his pistol ammo, and rushes out the door, a startled and appreciative McLean beside him. There is no mention of Marvin here, screaming about the Iwo Jima. They, I guess, ad-libbed that one on there. And then it says, in the airport bar, As the tape recording concludes, the patrons are in shock. Already several begin to run out. Camera pans away from the terminal bar towards a gift shop. There, all the portable TVs on display are broadcasting the same thing. A customer, hearing this, drops a crystal vase. See? That was even in the script. They don't talk about the blue water thing that you were talking about, but the vase is in there. And then basically the quote from Thornburg is exactly the same. And then it says, the terminal is suddenly full of screaming people. And that's it. That's the way that they do this. So, Alan, did you have like maybe another story to tell everyone about something that's happened to you that's airplane or airport related?
Yeah, I think I wanted to tell something. We, you know, how you mentioned your story about being kind of caught, but pre 9/11 with having a basically live ammo in your bag.
Yes. Yes.
Here's how much it's changed. So they you talked about bringing liquid in and, you know, going through the TSA, going through the scanners, going through the line, having all your stuff x-rayed. The last time we traveled, it said you can have liquids, but no more than 4 ounces in any kind of a liquid container. I was like, okay, well, I had a can of hairspray and my daughter was like, well, can you just fit this in your bag? It was just a can of hairspray, but it was like a aerosol. So it was a sealed can. You cannot open it. You can't unscrew it. It's just a can. But because it was more than 4 ounces, they confiscated it. I had to stand off to the side. They're like, sir, is this your bag? I'm like, yeah. Sir, do you want to tell us what's in here? I'm like, clothes. They're just like, is that all that's in here? I'm like, my shaver and some other things for traveling. And like, what's this tube? I'm like, hairspray? I'm like, is it more than 4 ounces? I'm like, it's hairspray. It's not a liquid. He goes, well, it's a liquid inside there. It's like, you're really considering a can of hairspray as 4 ounces or more of a liquid. He's like, yep. Like, you know what? Throw it away. I don't care. I'll buy another can when I land. I was being probably less than cooperative as a flying public with these government agents. But I was like, are you kidding me? A can that you would have to puncture it with some kind of a weapon to open it up. You can't unscrew it. It's not liquid. It's not like shampoo or conditioner or something, but right. They still confiscated it. So that's, they're serious about it.
Well, if you're talking about things that have been confiscated, I was on a work trip, I think it was 9 years ago. And I was in Germany, in Bonn, Germany for a few days. And on my way home, so I happened to have a bottle of Heinz ketchup in my bag that I had been using, you know, while I was there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to throw away the bottle. I'll take it home and I'll, you know, continue using it at home. What's the big deal? And when I went through the security in Germany, they pulled it out. And actually, I also had a thing of mustard, you know, and they took both of them out and they're like, you can't take this on the plane. I'm like, it's ketchup and mustard. What am I going to do with it? Nope, you got to get rid of it. So I had to throw it away. I wasn't really gonna sit there and argue with them about it because
they saw it's not worth it. Impossible once, and they realized if you take the red side and mash it against the green side, you've got these two compounds. You're really that's disguised to look like ketchup mustard, but what you're gonna do is you're gonna create an explosive compound.
Of course, that's exactly what I was gonna.
That's
do.
What all the bad guys are doing.
That's right. And some of the good guys, James Bond does that too. You know, so you know, he's got his. Plastic gum. So, you know, it's not impossible. Whatever. What can I tell you? All right. So, Alan, you want to tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Yeah, you did mention both of my shows. You don't necessarily skirt the line of politics, but I've got a show where I do. I talk all the news and happenings of the day. The Alan Sanders Show. It's a week news podcast. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcast. And then we do have an entertainment one. My buddy Walt and I did The Wilder Ride, where we did movies of Gene Wilder for 2 seasons, turned it into a talk show during the great flu outbreak of 2020. And you got 4 seasons worth of material that you can go and enjoy. And I think a lot of fun there still. They're pretty evergreen, so you can catch them anytime. Just go to thewilderride.com or just search for The Wilder Ride wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, or subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, which is for some reason now called X. And you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,